Blog Talk Radio.
The big mega banks are all pushing, quote, austerity, higher tax.
for everybody worldwide.
Yeah, except for the world.
This is in Europe. Higher taxes here. Federal Reserve's calling for it today. Here's the London Independent. What price the new democracy, this is a joke, it's not elected, where the bankers are installing their people, mainly Goldman Sachs execs, over the countries in Greece, in Ireland, in the big ones, Italy with Monti. What price the new democracy, Goldman Sachs, conquers Europe through fraud? They sell fraud, have the governments back it, sign the public on, then have the corporate whore media tell you you owe the money. That is actually there. Money. The people's money. So this is what's going on. And then I have another article down here where the Federal Reserve is saying we've got to raise taxes to pay off all of this debt.
Their debt.
The bankers create the debt. They have the media say it's your debt and raise your taxes, cut your benefits. But now you're dependent, and half the public's dependent one way or another on a government paycheck or handout or government contract. So we stay in the fraud. We stay in the game. They're openly announcing a bank of the world that you pay your carbon taxes to. It's the big banks behind Agenda 21, all the regulations. It's meant to shut down grassroots economies. They're banning garage sales. They're banning using cash in private sales in Louisiana. They're attacking Amish everywhere, people selling watermelons on the side of the road. I just saw where Homeland Security is buying giant wheeled tanks out of some movie. They're so huge. And armored pillboxes for the sides of the highways. And hundreds of millions of rounds of ammo and admitting preparing for war with us. We're being conquered by the bankers. They bought both parties. It's the New World Order. It's the Federal Reserve. And Warren Buffett, up there with that corrupt Wall Street-run White House, sent folks that own Bush, saying get the rich using class warfare to sick the underclasses and blue-collar folks, in many cases that aren't informed, against what's left of the middle class. It's so sick, and it's hidden in plain view, and I've had enough. So, of course, the bought and paid for. Congress is probably going to pass the Buffett rule to rip everybody off of that money. It'll all go to the offshore bankers and Warren Buffett. Totally sick. Warren Buffett got rich off being an insider with insider knowledge like Bernie Madoff and the rest of them. The Buffett rule is one of the biggest frauds in modern taxation history in America. Mm-hmm. And don't say you weren't told. Get the word out on this fraud. Like SOPA, we can beat it if you expose the fraud that it is. I'm Alex Jones signing off for InfoWars.com.
They killed that bill.
That's excellent that they did.
No, they killed the bill. 400 to nothing.
I'm surprised.
Yeah. Because it wasn't what it was meant to be. It's a
fraud.
Fraud. They increased the taxes on everybody. People over 100, 250,000 or something got clobbered. But not the super rich.
No. Sarkozy?
Yes, Sarkozy's running. The bankster's ultimate dream, a cashless society, starting with the military.
Let's read this.
Why is a cashless society the holy...
Let's go to the article first, because sometimes it...
Right.
They take something out of the middle of the article. And this is from the Intel Hub.
Okay, why is a cashless society
the holy grail of total tyrannical control for the banksters? Because once your entire financial banking life is under the dominion of these criminals in the form of a card or an implant chip, you will never again be free. They are already tracking you, building a database about you, and monitoring your every move. But once cashless transactions are done away with entirely, if the banksters or fascist government don't like your point of view or politics, they can just turn your chip off.
Silver is the Achilles heel of the financial vampires. Liberty CPM outstanding prices on Silverhead, and no one may buy or sell except one who has the mark or the name of the beast. It's all part of the Rockefeller plan, as Hollywood producer Aaron Russo warned. We recently received this note about the U.S. military's implementation of the Eagle Cash Card, a misnomer since there's no cash involved. This is just another part of the slippery slope into 100% fascist society controlled by a tiny group of elite psychopaths. Here's the note.
Hey, SGT. I love your blog and read it every day. I wanted to add something you may be missing. I am presently working for the U.S. military at a deployed location. Soldiers, sailors, airmen, and Marines are already laying the groundwork for the cashless society. We are already using chips. However, these chips are smart cards with chips on them. It's called the Cash Eagle. It's called the Eagle Cash Card. As with most technology that the government employs, they're trying it out on the Department of Defense in areas not in plain sight of regular civilians. The powers that be are very keen on using something called successive approximation. Basically, in layman's terms, baby steps. I don't think they're going to the implants immediately. It's still too sci-fi for most people and too creepy for others. I truly believe they're going to use smart cards first. They're already using them. I know this because I have one, and the Federal Reserve Bank of Boston manages it. We basically use it as anyone you'd use a standard credit card. However, the funds come directly from our bank accounts. We could load funds on it and immediately use it at every vendor. We can also transfer funds among each other from soldier to soldier. We just need to go to an Eagle Cash machine to make the transfer or check the balance. Every time we make a purchase, even if it's a 50-cent pack of gum, we run the card. In fact, I haven't seen a U.S. dollar or any other currency other than the host nations in more than a year.
I have been using it for more than 3 years now at an undisclosed location in the Middle East. A quick search on the Internet and you will find what I am saying is true. Or you can ask a returning soldier, airman, seaman, or marine, and now a contractor. Keep up the good work. The name of the game is total control. If you think banksters are moving up towards a total control grid monetary nightmare at warp speed, check out the Brunei-based bank Islam
Brunei
Darussalam's new biometric ATMs. And please take special note of what appears to be number 666 in the bank's logo. You just can't make this stuff up. And we've long stated friends. At this point, it's humanity versus the bankers. Interesting.
Yeah.
Interesting, folks.
That was from IntelHub.com.
Yeah. Sergeant Report.
Mm-hmm.
And,
get 25 years in prison if you annoy or offend someone on the Internet. Will Brewer approve?
Arizona Representative Ted Boger. Recently addressed Arizona Bill 2549 that passed the House Thursday and is now awaiting the governor's approval. This bill now sets for approval for the very dangerous to almost anyone to use an electronic device. In fact, so dangerous it could land you in prison for 25 years for essentially hurting someone's feelings on the Internet. Not to mention, government-paid troll hackers are advancing on all fronts as innocent people, truthers, patriots, or people such as the likes of Ron Paul supporters could easily be set up and are targeted by nefarious people, organizations, or even Big Brother.
Oh, this is from the IntelHub.com,
yeah.
Too. Civilian Intelligence Agency.
Right. In the recent article from CNN Rep. Ted Vogt,
shills for the establishment in a failed attempt to trick the general public. I think they're absolutely mistaken, Arizona Representative Ted Vogt said of bloggers and civil liberties groups that said the bill would censor the Internet. They clearly haven't read the bill. This law targets a course of conduct where an individual is harassing, threatening, or annoying a specific person. Here's the paragraph in the bill that got everyone riled up. It is unlawful for any person with intent to terrify, intimidate, threaten, harass, annoy, or offend to use any electronic or digital device and use any obscene, lewd, or profane language or suggest any lewd or lascivious act or threaten to inflict physical harm to the person or property of any person. It is also unlawful to otherwise disturb by repeated anonymous electronic or digital communication the peace and quiet or right of privacy of any person at the place where the communications were received.
Observers said that
excuse me.
Observers said that language was overly broad and could be
excuse me.
Bless you there, though.
I think there's a lot of pollen.
It could be applied to censor the comments section of the websites and other public digital forums. Wood said that Wednesday that the bill would be amended to say those harassing communications must be directed at a specific person and must be unwanted or unsolicited. Those updates did not appear yet on online versions of the bill viewed Wednesday morning. The bill will not apply to online comment sections or semi-public forums such as Facebook walls. With Facebook, you've got control over your friends, who your friends are, he said. So if somebody is threatening you and you never defend or defriend them, then you're not controlling it. You're inviting people to comment freely on your Facebook page, and you can defriend them, and you can end the problem there. Well, comment sections are the same, he said. Since websites don't have the right to don't have to invite people to comment, and can take down those sections if they are worried about threats. Some will argue that the bill is great and we should be happy that our loving government will regulate cyberbullies on the internet like they regulate bullies at elementary school playgrounds across the nation. So what will justify harassment? The bill currently reads, it is unlawful for any person with intent to terrify, intimidate, threaten, harass, annoy, or offend use any electronic or digital device, use any obscene, lewd, or profane language, or suggest any lewd or lascivious act, or threaten to inflict physical harm to the person or first party property of any person. It is also unlawful to otherwise disturb or repeat anonymous electronic or digital communications, the peace, quiet, or right of privacy of any person at the place where the communications were received. I read that earlier, but I thought it was important to read the article the way it's read that specific thing. I don't really think I see a problem with that yet. Do you?
It says, well, that pretty much covers it. If you so much as annoy, what does annoy or offend mean?
And someone on the internet, you can do prison time.
So who defines what annoy or offend is?
Yeah, well, what they're saying is, that's what they're saying. See, under Facebook or Twitter or whatever, you can, if somebody sends you something, you can say, and you don't like them, then you can just defriend them, you know, like get rid of them. But so they can't annoy you anymore, you know. Same thing with these. But if somebody sends you an electronic email,
mm-hmm.
let's say, you know, and it says I'm going to kill you, I'm going to.
I could offend somebody by saying I support Ron Paul.
Yeah, but you're not
that
threatening.
No, it doesn't say threatening. It said it's unlawful for any person with intent to terrify, intimidate, threaten,
right.
harass, annoy, or offend.
Right.
So how do I know that you might be offended if you're a Romney supporter? I send you something from on
well,
Ron Paul.
Well, you'll know that you've offended them if they defriend you. You know,
but you could also be arrested for that because they were offended. It's very broad language, Leo.
Well, it's that's that there, but where is it here? It says something to this effect. I just read it about the Facebook. Well, as I when it's a semi-public. If you're inviting people to comment freely, he says the bill will not apply to online comment sections of semi-public forums such as Facebook walls. Doesn't apply to that.
But if you emailed somebody, it would apply to a right.
Well, it says, with Facebook, you've got control over your friends are, he said. So if somebody is threatening you and you never defriend them, then you're not controlling it. You're inviting people to comment freely on your Facebook page. You can defriend them, and you can end the problem there. Comment sections are the same. He says such websites do not have to invite people to comment and can take down those sections if they are worried about threats. That's true.
Some will argue that the bill is great and we should be happy that our loving government will regulate cyber bullies on the internet like they regulate bullies in elementary school playgrounds.
Across the nation. Excuse me.
I don't like the broadness of this.
But it says, lots of people are annoying to me, and some actually reside in Arizona. So how will this affect them if I complain that they annoy me? Will they get prison time? And the above is an example of just how ridiculously, ultimately dangerous this bill actually is. It also makes one wonder how far this will actually go. For example, can the media even report or offer opinion anymore? And articles appearing on the internet by every major media publication and outfit imaginable contain opinion or what someone could deem offensive.
Mm-hmm.
Will this limit our freedom of press if someone is in the limelight claims they were annoyed with Jan Brewer signed the bill? And
I don't like that.
That doesn't sound too good to me. But I would hope they would. They're going to do something like that to protect cyberbullying and clean it up a bit, clean it up a lot. I don't know if I could handle stuff like that. This is sad. In Somalia, a famine for profit and the East African food crisis. I'll read about this. I think it's important.
It's too sad.
But, it's this speculation on food and commodities.
Well, like they're speculating on oil, but now they speculate on food.
Yeah, and water.
And water, so that people are starving and
thirst. They're dying of thirst.
They should just.
These are horrible people, man. I'll tell you. This system is really, really horrible. But, I don't understand this. I'm kind of. Wide enough for some reason.
Yeah. And that doesn't fit there. Yes, it does.
And
it fits.
Is that?
It's really long, though. I think it's too long. That's a really long article.
Yeah.
You can't really.
Yeah. You can go to
the gist of the article is that there's famine for profit in East Africa, and you could read that article by Niall Bowie.
The African food crisis, and. Niall Bowie on globalresearch.ca.
I mean, the poor people don't have enough food or water.
Yeah.
It's terrible, and they're speculating on it, so they're starving.
Let me just read this.
Read the front part.
It says, to really reduce population quickly, you have to pull all the males into the fighting, and you have to kill significant numbers of fertile-aged females. The quickest way to reduce population is through famine, like in Africa, or through disease, like the Black Death. That's from Thomas Ferguson, U.S. State Department Office of Public Affairs, the Population Affairs. Few parts of the world aptly fit the description of hell better than Somalia's crumbling capital city, Mogadishu. A nation ravaged by imperialism, dominant domestic instability, and economic sabotage from foreign forces. Parades of malnourished Africans queuing up to receive rations are trumpeted in 30-second news pieces on most mainstream media outlets, of which offer embarrassingly insubstantial examples of journalism with little explanation for images of unparalleled inequality, past the effects of droughts, where never missing the opportunity to highlight the threat of Al-Qaeda. In Somalia's case, a nation once self-sufficient in its food production, the economic medicine of the International Monetary Fund and the behest of colonial oil robber barons have contributed far more devastation than droughts toward producing the image of deprived and inebriated bodies who see you see on television. And it goes on quite a bit. But, you know, they're speculating for food, they're speculating for oil, speculating for everything. And it's killing everybody, especially in Somalia.
Mm-hmm.
Or so
in other parts of the world.
Yeah.
Well, there's people starving in this country. A lot of homeless.
Yeah.
But Vermont, what are they overturning?
Vermont's had votes to overturn Citizens United. Senator Bernie Sanders welcomed today's Vermont Senate passage of a resolution calling on Congress to propose a constitutional amendment to undo a U.S. Supreme Court ruling that threw out a ban on corporate campaign spending. I congratulate the Vermont Senate for the important vote. Citizens United was one of the most decisive ever handed down by the Supreme Court, one of the worst decisions ever handed down by the Supreme Court. The people of Vermont and across America are totally disgusted with the huge amounts of money that billionaires and corporations are now throwing into the political process as a result of that misguided decision, Bernie Sanders said. Go on to read that. That's good for Vermont that they're doing that. Based on state rights, yeah.
Yeah. The Vermont Senate has now added its own strong voice to a grassroots movement that is growing all across the United States, he added. We must overturn this disastrous decision. The Vermont Senate resolution asks Congress to consider an amendment to clarify that money is not speech and corporations are not persons under the U.S. Constitution. The state vote came after similar resolutions were passed in March by voters in 64 Vermont communities on town meeting day. State and local officials across the country also have begun to speak against the 2010 ruling in Citizens United versus the Federal Election Commission. Sanders last December 8th introduced the Saving American Democracy Amendment. His proposal would restore the power of Congress and state lawmakers to enact campaign spending limits like laws that were in place for a century before the controversial court ruling. In Washington, a summit meeting is scheduled for April 18th in the Capitol on local, state, and federal efforts to amend the Constitution in the wake of the Supreme Court ruling. The meeting is hosted by Senator Sanders and Tom Udall, Democrat, New Mexico, Representative Ted Dietrich, Democrat, Florida, Donna Edwards, Democrat, Maryland, Keith Ellison, Democrat, Minnesota, and Jim McGovern, Democrat, Massachusetts. So, that's good. I hope that works.
Yeah, me too. So, same to them. I hope they can fight that. I hope we can help them.
The earth is full. The Church of Malthus.
Oh, this is Malthus is the population reduction guy.
Oh, let's listen to that.
Paul
it is of humanity.
Paul Gilding is the earth is full talk. Almost 1 million years of human progress has finally reached its limits. This is a tale that has been fallaciously told for at least the last 200 years since crackpot economist Thomas Malthus warned of imminent societal collapse based on growing population. A prediction, like one of the suicidal doomsday cult, that has been demonstratively and repeatedly proven wrong. Gilding also attempts to link climate change in as manifestation of our reached limits. I don't know if I want to listen to the 15 minutes that I got. You?
Well, it might be interesting.
Okay. Merck baldness, drugs, destroy sperm, cause infertility and ejaculation disorders, even after you stop using them. Oh, boy. Hey, man. Looking for a way to ruin your sex life and become infertile? Try Propecia or Proscar, two drugs from the vaccine giant Merck, whose top vaccine scientist, Maurice Hilleman, already admitted that Merck's vaccine contains stealth viruses that cause cancer.
Oh, my God.
Right. Now the FDA is finally, after years of delays and denials, calling for new warnings on the label of male baldness drugs made by Merck. According to the FDA, Propecia and Proscar are now linked to ejaculation disorders, and libido disorders, not tonight, honey, and orgasm disorders, still nothing, and erectile dysfunction, life is hard, but you're not, male fertility, you're firing blanks, dude, and the best part about all the, about these male baldness drugs, these effects continue even after you stop using the drugs, and once you grow your hair back, you're all screwed up. Let's see what else is to talk about here. National news. So let me keep going on here. This article.
So let's see. A guy starts to go bald and thinks his male vitality is slowly slipping away, but at least he can still get erections without pills, he thinks to himself. So he reaches for Propecia or Proscar to solve his male baldness problem, but a month later, I mean, he might have another tuft of hair on his head, but his manhood has gone soft, and 5 months down the road, he's got so much hair that chicks are digging me, but in bed, he's softer than a baseball bat made of jello. But wait, there's another pill for that, too, so the guy starts popping Viagra to give himself an erection, which barely even works because blood flow to his member has been reduced by his baldness drug. So now, just to get laid, as some guys like to crudely describe it, he's got to pop one pill to have hair, another pill to have an erection, and the thought of all makes him so depressed that he soon finds himself popping SSRI antidepressant drugs just to keep him from crying like a baby during his morning shower. So now he's a total pill freak who doesn't realize the real root of his problem is not biochemistry, but far more likely his personality and priorities.
There's a better way.
Not to spill pill and restore your manhood. I could do a whole series of articles about how to keep your male hormones and performances at peak levels no matter what your age. Healthy men and women have sex well into their 60s and beyond. Healthy men in their 30s and 40s do not go limp unless something's seriously wrong with their health. In fact, just to be open and honest about basic male biology, if you're not waking up with a stiffy several mornings a week, something's probably not right with your nutrition and cardiovascular health. Healthy men experience frequent morning erections, plain and simple. What I can't say on the internet, just be glad we're not posting videos.
Let's see.
Now, so for hair loss.
You want to continue that? Okay, go ahead.
I don't know.
No, go ahead. You're doing good.
See, there's not much you can do about that. It's the same story with hair color. Hair is programmed to go gray. You see it in gorillas as well as the silver-backed hair pattern that signifies experience and seniority. Some guys are just flat-out programmed to lose their hair. It truly is genetic. And about the only thing you can do about that is practice anti-aging nutritional strategies to slow the biological clock of aging. This is done through four primary strategies. Engaging in exercises, consuming superfoods and raw vegetable juices, avoid processed dead foods and fried foods, avoid medications and vaccines. To generate your own sex hormones for free, the best strategy is to engage in regular strenuous exercise with something like kettlebells. Avoid junk food and medication is the key to protecting your manhood and preventing premature aging, which is definitely what's hitting a lot of guys in their 20s and 30s these days. A huge number of prescription drugs interfere with healthy hormone levels and turn you into a flaccid, pill-popping eunuch. This is especially true of cholesterol drugs and heart medications.
If you are in that boat right now, you can turn it around by making better choices on your day-to-day diet and activities. Losing your hair, real women like authentic, confident men more than they like hair. So, let's see, this goes on a little bit further here, I guess. That's okay. Yeah, go ahead. You want to read it?
I just wanted a full head of hair doesn't compensate for being a prick.
Does that say it in there?
Yeah.
Right.
Just remember, a full out affair doesn't compensate for being a prick.
Right. I'll just read this article. This is quick. This is all that's.
I read that.
No, you didn't read that.
No, uh-uh.
Sure, losing your hair is depressing and downright cruel. Do women judge you by your looks? You bet they do, especially when they're younger. But if you're losing your hair at age 35, you probably shouldn't be dating 20-year-olds anyway. And mature women are far more interested in who you are as a human being rather than solely what you look like. If you are authentic and confident in who you are, and you bring to a potential relationship, the male pattern baldness issue quickly becomes irrelevant. But after all, there are lots of guys with plenty of hair who treat women like crap. And women are tired of that routine. What women really want is someone who sees them for who they are, who values them as human beings and their life partners, and who is committed to a loving relationship. If you're chasing women after you aren't qualified, if you're chasing women after women who aren't into quality relationships, you're probably chasing the wrong woman. Hair or no hair. Because remember, a full head of hair doesn't compensate for being a prick.
And
if you're popping pills to try to avoid your biochemistry, you're probably looking for love in all the wrong places, as the song goes. Maybe you should focus on yourself for a change, your listening skills, your ethics, your appetite for sharing the fun moments in life with someone you love. Maybe the problem isn't your lack of prescription medications as much as it is just you. And looking in the mirror and manning up to that fact isn't easy. As we all can probably agree. I had my own moments of awakening that took courage to face as well, but if you really want to be attractive to the opposite sex, happy with who you are as a person, and confident in moving toward the world with purpose, you'll need nutrition, regular exercise, and dedication to living by a set of ethical principles. And as far as I know, you can't pop pills to get principles, and those have to come from your inner drive, be a better human being. And that's the path to not only a happy relationship with your partner, but also just being able to live with yourself.
Feeling good.
Hmm.
I think all those pills isn't going to solve the problem.
Yeah,
they're
starting this at 20s and their 20s. Holy crap.
Americans are killing themselves with sugar. That's probably true. 5 reasons to start meditating today.
I want to read about the sugar. Everybody kind of knows there.
Well, I think, let's see what else. Aftermath, unanswered questions from 9/11. That might be interesting.
I don't know how long that one is, though.
ICC is criminal. We have canceled your bookings. The criminalization of travel to the West Bank is laid bare to the world. Can't even go to Palestine anymore?
No, they're blocking that. They only let Jews in. I have an article on that somewhere.
Right here. This Sunday I was planning to fly to Tel Aviv with up to 1,500 other participants in Welcome to Palestine 2012, a peaceful initiative, travel and solidarity with Palestinians in the West Bank. We had an invitation from over 25 civil groups across the West Bank. We had the blessing of the mayor of Bethlehem. Our plans consisted of such terrorist activities as laying the cornerstone of a kindergarten, repairing damaged wells, and planting olive trees. This morning I received the following notice from the airline on which I had purchased the ticket to Tel Aviv. We have canceled your booking, the criminalization of traveling to the West Bank. This is from Ukranet. I mean, they have some nerve. They can't. Let's see.
They're troublemakers. Troublemakers.
What did they receive? This morning I received the following notice from the airline in which I had purchased the ticket to fly to Tel Aviv. Dear Laura Durke, jet2.com. is required by the Israeli authorities to provide advanced passenger information in relation to all passengers that it carries on flights to Israel. Advanced passenger information includes the passenger's name, date of birth, passport number, and nationality. In accordance with Article 7 of its terms and conditions, Jet2.com has provided advance passenger information in respect of your flight from Manchester to Israel. As a result of providing that information, Jet2.com has been informed by the Israeli authorities that you will not be permitted to enter Israel. Consequently, if Jet2.com carries you to Israel, you'll be refused entry, and Jet2.com will be liable for both a fine and your return to Manchester. As a result, and in accordance with Article 24 of its terms and conditions, Jet2.com may refuse to carry you where such action is necessary for reasons of safety and or security and or to comply with applicable laws, regulations, or orders of any country to be flown from, into or over, including laws or regulations relating to advanced passenger information requirements. Regret that, in the light of the decision taken by the Israeli authorities, we are unable to accept you for carriage to Israel on this occasion, and your booking with Jet2.com has been canceled. In accordance with Article 26.3 of its terms and conditions, Jet2.com is a non-refundable airline, and we will therefore be unable to offer any refund, with the exception of a refund of the applicable taxes paid as a result of the decision taken by the Israeli authorities. Jet2.com would like to apologize for the inconvenience caused by the cancellation of your booking, which we hope you will appreciate is totally beyond our control. So they kept her money.
Yeah.
Yours sincerely, Jet2.com customer care team. God, I'd hate to be dealing with the customer care team. I soon found out I was far from alone. Many other UK participants had received the same notice. In France, Lufthansa had cut to the chase and canceled an entire flight to Tel Aviv. On the other hand, this is hardly surprising. The Israeli government has a long record of denying entry to any international suspected of sympathy with Palestinians. And, of course, this is just the tip of the iceberg being the hundreds of thousands of Palestinians who are unable to return to their own country, even for a brief visit as a tourist. But it is worth taking a step back to realize how thoroughly absurd and far-reaching these policies have become. With this sweeping denial of entry of hundreds of activists simultaneously, the Israeli government policy of criminalizing mere travel to the occupied territories is laid bare for all the world to see. When I participated in Welcome to Palestine 2011 last July, I was effectively imprisoned for 4 days simply for answering when asked where I was going, Bethlehem. In the bizarre world of Tel Aviv's Ben-Gurion Airport, even to speak the word Palestine is forbidden. One of the goals of the Welcome to Palestine initiative is to highlight the fact that while conditions may not be as dire as in the Gaza Strip, the West Bank is also under Israeli siege since Israel controls all points of entry and exit. Today, with the willing cooperation of European governments and corporations, that siege extends as far as Brussels, Paris, and Manchester. But all the Israeli government has done is to ensure that resistance to its policies will reach those shores as well. Laura Durkee is a writer and an activist living in New York City, involved in the queer rights and Palestine solidarity movements as a member of the International Socialist Organization. She blogs about film, struggle, history, and the intersection at lauraontheleftcoastblogspot.com. Well, give her a lot of credit.
Okay.
All right. So do we have a little audio that we could play?
I'm trying to get one here. If you just wait a second, I'll see if one up for any second now. I don't know why that struck me as funny. Funny.
What's that one? Feeling the American takeover.
Yeah.
That might be interesting. Let's put that on.
Okay. Okay, revealing the American takeover. I don't know what this is. Oh, I know what this is. This is a guy who just goes on a rant.
Oh.
Yeah,
it isn't what I thought it was.
State taxes being scammed for corporations.
That might be interesting.
Oh, boy. Okay, a second. Good jobs first. National Policy Research Center based in D.C. has put out a first-of-its-kind report about PIT subsidies.
Or personal income subsidies. Basically, companies across the nation are literally pocketing the state income taxes of their employees. Companies across the nation have struck deals with states that allows them to keep or be free funded for a portion or all of their employees' state income taxes. That is so wrong.
Crap.
Job creation. One of the best ways for politicians all over the country to prove their worth. No matter what's going on in your state, every politician knows that saying, "I brought jobs to our state," is a golden ticket to re-election. Just listen to some of them fall all over themselves talking about their role in creating a business-friendly environment.
And we are now moving at the speed of business. I mean, just yesterday it was announced that Wendy's is leaving Georgia, their corporate headquarters, to come back to its home in Columbus, Ohio.
You lower the tax rate and have a regulatory climate that's fair and predictable, a legal system that doesn't allow for oversuing, and then government get out of the way, and people will move to your state.
We say, first of all, Virginia's open for business, and we appreciate entrepreneurship and wealth formation and people that create opportunities for the American dream. That means lower taxes, regulation, litigation, strong right to work laws, great universities, and saying we want you to come and create business.
But there's a little something that they aren't telling you. It's the dirty little secret. Of job creation, and it's sparking a new battle between the states. Yesterday, Good Jobs First, a National Policy Research Center, put out a first-of-its-kind report about PIT subsidies, or personal income subsidies. Now, this report is shocking, to say the least. It shows how companies across the nation are literally pocketing the state personal income taxes of their employees. And yeah, you heard that right. Companies have struck deals with states that allow them to keep or be refunded for their employees' state income taxes. Now, this second war between the states was all started by one that stayed neutral during the Civil War, Kentucky. In 1988, Kentucky passed the Rural Economic Development Act. And this act gave companies job assessment fees for opening up shop in areas with high unemployment. But here's how the job assessment fees worked. A percentage of workers' wages were subtracted from their paychecks and then kept by the employer. But don't worry, that doesn't mean that the workers took home less money because their tax rates were also lower. So the amount that they took home stayed the same. Or in other words, instead of all of an employee's income tax going to the state, in a roundabout way, the company was able to pocket all or a percentage of it. And this new bargaining tool gave Kentucky the leg up in negotiations. So it should come as no surprise that surrounding states like Ohio, Indiana, they followed suit. And today, 16 states participate in PIT subsidies. Now, since their conception, PIT subsidies have bred job blackmail by companies against states as well as bidding wars between states. And the worst part is that it's all done in the name of job creation. But most of the time, what really happens is a corporate shell game. Let's say that I have a company. My headquarters are in Kansas City, Missouri. And the state of Kansas approaches me and says that if you move your headquarters 10 miles to Leawood, Kansas, we'll let you keep 95% of new employees' personal income tax. And since all of your current employees are new to us, then they all count as well. And yeah, the thing is, that's not even a hypothetical. That actually happened in 2009 in a deal between Kansas and AMC Entertainment. So a company moves buildings across the state line, adds no new jobs to the American workforce, but is given perks for bringing new jobs to the state, and the lawmakers all get to tout their fabulous job creation skills. Now here, let me explain this to you in a little bit of a different way. A company moves buildings across state lines, adds no new jobs to the American workforce, but is given perks for bringing new jobs to the state, and the lawmakers all get to tout their fabulous job creation. Oh, wait, that's right. That wasn't new at all. I just changed locations and called it new because I was in a new place. man, all this talk about corporations kind of has me acting like them. Now, you might be thinking to yourself, so what, right? Those companies come to those states and they benefit them in other ways. I mean, after all, the company... So you're still paying its taxes, right? Well, let's pick a company, I don't know, how about General Electric? I'm sure that all of you remember when this tax dodger story broke.
General Electric is near the top of the list. The report finds it paid zero income tax for the last 3 years, while their U.S. profits in that time amounted to $10 billion.
Now, the report that got everybody riled up was put out by the Institute on Taxation and Economic Policy. As you can see, it shows that between 2008 and 2010, even though GE posted profits over $10 billion, they received a $4,737 credit from Uncle Sam instead of paying any federal income taxes. But what about state income taxes? Surely they were forking that over to the governments, right? Well, not exactly. A separate report put out by the same institute shows that in 2010, a year the GE posted over $4 billion in profit, they paid approximately negative $1 billion in state income taxes across the 50 states. So in 2010, GE paid negative state and federal income taxes. But that's not all. Do not forget about those personal income tax subsidies. As you can see, in 2009, GE was awarded a job retention tax credit that amounts to $15 million over 15 years. And that's just one subsidy in one state to one company. Now, GE might be one of the extreme examples, but you know the companies use these gimmicks and these loopholes as much as they possibly can. That's why their accounting departments are so large. So we have companies not paying federal income tax or state income tax and profiting off of their own employees' personal income tax. So it's no wonder that we're seeing budget crises across the country. So I think that it's pretty clear here. In the second battle between the states, the corporations win. And we're all left awkwardly screaming, the individual will rise again.
What a crooked deal, folks.
Yeah.
What a crooked deal. I'll tell you.
Every time you think you have it all together and you understand everything, and you figured everything out, they throw another wrench in where there's a crooked deal. You're right.
Yeah. There's another interesting one. Tennessee Senate approves bill to warn students that hand-holding is a gateway sexual activity. Like any state legislature dealing with 8% unemployment and thousands of its residents facing disenfranchisement, the Tennessee state is targeting the menace of underage handholding. Last week, the Senate passed SB 3310, a bill to update the state's abstinence-based sex education curriculum to define hand-holding hands and kissing as gateway sexual activities. Just one senator voted against the legislation. 28 voted in favor. Oh, God. Oh, God. What is wrong with Tennessee? That's where Al Gore comes from. Hang on a second. Pretty sick operation there.
Oh, yeah.
Can't hold hands. Last week, the Senate passed a bill to update the state's abstinence-based sex education curriculum to define holding hands and kissing as gateway sexual activities. Just one senator voted against it. 28 voted in favor. And since the bill specifically bans teachers from demonstrating gateway sexual activity, educators should be prohibited from even demonstrating what hand-holding is. Breaking these laws could result in a lawsuit, as Hunter from Daily Cause notes. If your teacher teaches you anything about sex that isn't specifically on the approved curriculum, like demonstrating holding hands for the class instead of quietly discussing about the danger it poses, then can be sued. They can be sued.
Huh.
Still, this hand-holding push may only be the second worst bill passed in Tennessee this month. Nearly a century after the volunteer state played host to the Scopes Monkey Trial, the legislature has now enacted a new law allowing educators to teach creationism alongside evolution.
Hmm.
So, buddy, We're in trouble in Tennessee. Loads of trouble there. Yeah. What do we got? We got another 3 minutes. Chinese supertanker boosts Iran's crude fleet ahead of EU oil embargo.
China is set to help Iran counter the EU oil embargo that's due to come into force in July. Beijing says it will deliver the first of 12 huge crude carriers to Iran next month to expand its tanker fleet, as many firms refuse to transport Iranian oil because of the current Western sanctions. Let's talk about this development with investment advisor Patrick Young. Patrick, good evening to you.
Good evening.
What a big move this, isn't it? I mean, with Iran having such support from China, will the embargo achieve its aim of forcing Tehran to abandon its nuclear program now, do you think?
Look, what we've seen here really is a situation where the world is no longer on a sort of single polar, bipolar axis. It's multipolar, and therefore China has incredible economic power. It can deliver all manner of different industrial and technological goods. It sees no reason not to manage to take advantage. And ultimately, these oil tankers have been being built for the last year, 2 years, and they're going to manage to deliver them just before the sanctions regime comes in. And I would imagine that that's going to be a very welcome development for the Iranian regime, who obviously can no longer sell their oil to Greece and other members of the European Union.
Well, talking of that, as you say, Greece and Spain, they've become the latest countries to stop importing that Iranian oil because of that embargo. Of course, both countries as well, as we've been talking about at length over the last year or so, on their uppers at the moment financially. How big a blow is that going to be to them?
Well, it's absolutely tragic for them because just at the point in time where all of the other pillars of their civilization are gradually being kicked out because the fiscal firmament is a total disaster, they find that the oil that they had at very reasonable prices is suddenly going to have to go to market rate oil that they're going to have to transource from somewhere else. So it's one of these curious predicaments where no one really wants to argue about the politics of the affair, but ultimately it's the European Union's weakest nations that are actually in the direct line to suffer more than necessarily the Iranians themselves.
Do you know, I was just getting my hair cut in a barber's in Italy only yesterday. Don't ask me why, it's a long story, but the talk in that barber's was of the rising gas prices going up 2%, going up 10% rather, oil prices going up 2% in the coming week or so. That's all they were talking about in that shop. It's really affecting people on the street. Why has the EU agreed to join the US in pressuring Iran with all this background in mind?
Well, look, I mean, clearly the EU has a series of different issues that it wants to bring forward, and one of them is that the European Union wants to act like some kind of major foreign power. It's spent a huge amount of money bringing in a sort of pan-European foreign commissioner, Mrs. Ashton, and so on. And the problem then is, of course, that sometimes you have to do things in foreign policy that, well, to use an old Irish expression, you end up cutting off your nose to spite your face.
That's essentially that. You can see the rest at you can go to davidikesite.com and check out some of those articles. And in the meantime, we're going to say goodnight. Join me tomorrow as I take you to I take a ride into the fourth dimension with me. So good night, everyone. Thanks for joining.